So we are holding on Kofchet on the base. About 6 lines from the end of the narrow lines. The line begins, Vachamat. Okay, in the middle of talking about the map. Pasuk says, it happened after the 7 days. And the waters of the Mabul were on the earth. So the question is, what's that? The 7 days. We're talking about the Mabul. So the pasuk says that after 7 days, the Mabul began. What was going on during those 7 days? That then the Mabul began. These are the 7 days of Avelus for Mesushalach, who had passed away at that time. If you look in the Seder of the Dirdus before the Mabul, you find that Mr. Shalach passed away in that year, 1656, its creation. So he passed away that day, 7 days before the Mabul started. And therefore, there's the days of Avelus, which teaches you, that teaches you that a hesed, that crying for the death of a tzaddik, holds back punishment from coming.
Because the Mabul was delayed for a week
in order for because of the mourning for Mr. Shalach. Okay. Because people realize that then there's no tzaddik and therefore we better do tshuva, or because the tzar itself that they have is a bit of a kapara for them, whatever it is exactly. Gavrach, another explanation, l'shivas, what is the expression at the 7 days, implying that that there's something special about those 7 days. It means that during those 7 days, Hashem changed the normal workings of creation. Meaning it's the Seder of the normal that was set in place during the 7 days of creation was changed during these 7 days. And now now we're saying a different explanation. It's not because of Mr. Shalach's death. It's because for the last 7 days before the Mabul, Hashem made nature behave differently in order to warn them that trouble was coming. For example, the sun would rise in the west and set in the east, which Marsha explains, and Yaakov Emden explains somewhat similarly, that the verse is you have the sun and the moon and all the planets, their own motion is from west to east. The sun moves about a degree a day from west to east.
Depends where you are.
No, it's everywhere you are. But the earth rotates. Or in terms of the cosmology, the way that Amman puts it, is you have the galgal yomi, whatever it is, and therefore that causes them to move in the sky from east to west. So what happened is during those 7 days, and during the Mabul in general, the galgal yomi, or the rotation of the earth, whatever, didn't function. Therefore, you just have left the natural motion, the regular proper motion of the sun and the moon themselves, which is from west to east. So in that sense, like you could say, they were rising in the west and setting in the east. Because, Gavrach, another explanation, is another reason for the 7 days. First, Hashem set for them a long deadline, and it says at the end of Parashas Bereishis that I'm giving them 120 years, and then a shorter deadline. 120 years passed, they hadn't done tshuva, so then Eved should give them a shorter deadline, like one last chance. Especially, Marsha says, the vote is because you had people who were born during those 120 years. They didn't have the 420 years of warning, so therefore, for their sake, maybe she gave like an extra 7 days. Gavrach, another explanation, Meshiva Sayyamim, what's the point of 7 days? Sheikh Imam Me'ena Olam Haba. What the Eibishter did during those 7 days, he granted the people of that generation a taste of Olam Haba. So this is where they'll realize what kind of goodness they're keeping away. They're removing from themselves. They're losing by not doing tshuva. And the point is, the Poshim say that we learned in the Mishnah that the people of the Dura Mabul, that's it. They're goners. They're not Tzchei Mesim. They're not Omdin Modin. No, nothing. So unlike some of the other groups we mentioned in the Mishnah, where at least they're going to be judged lost and lovely, and therefore they're going to see what Olam Haba is and see at that time what they're going to be missing. The Dura Mabul was never going to have that. Therefore, they have to be shown it now, like this is the last chance they're ever going to have to see what Olam Haba is, because if they get destroyed, then that's it. They're never going to have the chance to see it again. Pasuk continues, and before the Mabul, the Eibishter tells Noach, "Mikol behemah tahor tikach l'chashiva shiva ish v'ishtoi." It says, "From all the kosher of behemoths, you should take for yourself 7 and 7." And by the way, Meforshim discuss, and it's actually a discussion already in the Medrash, is it, do we mean it? And we, when we learn it as kids, we always learn it one of two ways. Does it mean there were seven each of the kosher animals, as in, you know, three pairs plus one unpaired animal, or is it seven pairs, 14 altogether?
Three pairs?
No. From the non-kosher animals, we know it was one pair, one male and one female. From the kosher animals, when you're saying seven each, does it mean seven males and seven females? Or does it mean seven altogether, of which some are males and some are females? Okay, whatever. Anyway, and the pasuk calls them ish v'ishtoi, man and his wife. So the question is, ish v'ishtoi, hey, just look. What do you mean, man and wife? The animals don't have wifehood. They don't have marriages. It means that the animals that were going to be picked for the teva were the ones that no aveira had been done with them. We learned on Amar Aleph, we learned yesterday, that even the animals were crossbreeding or being crossbred or whatever outside of their species. These are Davka, the ones that remained with their species. And therefore, the Aleph says that is why the Torah gives them a distinction. The Torah calls them Ish v'Ishtei as if they were human beings to represent that they remain the way they were supposed to be. The Torah gives them that honor.
Wouldn't have been their fault if they were crossbred.
Well, we talked on Amar Aleph that maybe what it is people started crossbreeding animals, and then afterwards the animals developed a taste for that themselves. Whatever it is, the point is these are ones where none of that was true, and therefore the Aruch says the Torah honors them by calling them Ish v'Ishtei as if they were human beings. Minoyah. That's the question is, how is Noyah supposed to know which animals remained pure and which wasn't? It means what happened was he passed them in front of the teva. Any animal rear, when it passed by, the teva like held onto it, like wouldn't let it move any further. Magnet sort of. Then you know that no aveda had been done with them, and those are the ones that can go into the teva. If the teva doesn't grab a hold of it, then then you know that an aveda was done with it, and sorry, it let us go. Rabbi Boa says you don't need all that. It's the animals that came by themselves are the ones that Noach took, and the ones that came by themselves are the ones that Eibishter arranged are going to be the ones that are going to deserve to go on the table. So Noach didn't have to pass them in front of the table, nothing. Any one that he sees that is coming to him, that's coming to the table, he knows is one of the good ones. Rashi on the Pasuk, Marshall points out that Rashi on the Pasuk actually kind of combines these two opinions. He says that you have a bunch of animals came on their own, and among those, Noach passed them in front of the teva to see which ones are tackle worthy. The Pasuk continues, it says, make for yourself a teva of gopher wood. My gopher. What is gopher wood? Now, okay, Rashi points out, the point is, never again in Tanakh is this word mentioned. That we have to define it.
Gopher.
This is one of those words that appears only once in Tanakh. It actually mentions on the Pasuk it's appropriate because gopher, because the water of the marble involves sulfur to burn them, and therefore it's appropriate. Gopher is gopher. But what kind of wood is it? Amar Pada, Amri Dvei Rav Shila. So they say in the Yeshiva of Rav Shila, Zumam Liga, but Amri La Gumish. Two different types of wood. One or another type of wood. You have different explanations of what they are. I've seen explanations that it's some kind of light wood, like balsa wood, so that it floats more easily. It's some kind of strong wood, like cypress, so it can stand, so it can withstand the heavy waves of the marble, whatever. Those are the different possibilities. Okay. The pasuk is tsoyar tafta la teva. It says you should make a tsoyar for the teva. What is a tsoyar? Omer avich, and omelech, kadosh baruch hu l'noyach, kvav v'avon, and turgis v'magoliath, set up in the teva, precious stones and pearls, so that they'll shine for you as bright as the noon. And actually, Rashi meant, this is only one opinion, and the Medrash brings the other opinion that it's out of the window. Rashi mentioned both of them on the puzzle. So some of the say it may have been both, it may have been a window with they didn't have glass, and they didn't have clear glass in those days like we have now, but they may have used the precious stones as the equivalent of glass in the window, so therefore it's kind of both. Some of the Achronim talk about, we learned on Amar Aleph that Rav Yochanan held that Davka Noach was not really such a great tzaddik, he was only relative to his generation, so therefore the argument is, Rav Yochanan would be the one saying that there wasn't a window for Noach to be able to look out and see everybody's destruction, for the same reason as Lot and his family were supposed to look back and see Lot and see Sodom's destruction. They're not really worthy of doing that, therefore Rav Yochanan would have to hold, there's no window there's no window for looking out. They had to have these precious stones and pearls to give them light, as opposed to the other opinion that says that he was a great tzaddik, and if he had been in Avram's or whoever's time, he would have been even greater. Fine, then he can have a window to let in light, and also that this way they're actually able to look out and see what's going on outside.
In other words, he had the schus, or he had not the schus.
He had the schus, or he had no, he didn't have the schus, as the case may be, right? Okay. The pasuk continues, "Vel amot chalena milamal." The pasuk continues that you should make the teva float up to an amma on top. And the body of the teva, the pasuk says, was 300 amas long and 50 wide, and then 30 tall. So the make it narrow towards the top to an amma. Why? To b'hachi who the timer, because that way it'll last. So Rashi says this way the rain can drain off it.
It was kind of like a roof.
Yeah, it was like a roof. It was like a pitched roof. With an amma at the top over there. So Rashi, not over here, but by the way, I think I'm a pulpit, says that this way the rain can drain off it. Because so, if it was a flat roof, then all the weight of the water on it would make it collapse. The Adramah says the reason is that the point is that you had to make it narrower on the top, otherwise, as opposed to making it the same width throughout, or making it narrower on the bottom to tip over. So the hockey will be kind of this way, it'll be stable. Okay. People always depict it as a big boat with a keel and all, but considering the pasuk calls it a teva, between the box, the pasuk, it was more box shaped.
So it was very, very unstable.
The point is, that's why it was narrow on top in order to be stable.
Yeah.
Apparently it was enough. The fact is, it lasted. Okay. The pasuk continues, Tachim Shneim Ushlishim Tatzeh. The pasuk says you should make it with a bottom floor, a middle floor, and a top floor. Hello. What's the three floors for? So this, we all learn as kids, those of us who have kids this age, that were bringing home private projects like this a couple of weeks ago. In Tachiyat Tana, we learn in a bright, the Tachiyat Lezevel, the bottom floor was for the waste, and Tsoyim Lebehema, the middle floor was for the animals, Al-Yonim La'odim, and the top floor was for the people.
Why didn't you put the waste in the water?
They didn't have any because the cave is sealed shut. They can't. If they have any opening, then the water will get in
through the windows.
Yeah, apparently not. So it would have been too dangerous with the rain falling and all. So no, they had to keep it
covered.
Maybe eventually. Maybe it meant that. Maybe it doesn't necessarily mean. I guess they kept the whole year's worth of level down. Maybe it means eventually they every so often they throw it out. I don't know.
Maybe they composted it.
But that could also be, yeah, they may well use it to grow food for inside the teva, yeah, who knows. There are actually, this is the most well-known opinion, this is the one the kids always learn and play there, but there are actually, in the Midrashim, it gives different other possibilities, including maybe each floor has its own waste area, like the people who lived on the top floor, their waste would be on the top floor in chambers over there, whatever. Okay. Anyway.
So that was the waste of all the animals?
Apparently, yeah. Okay, later on after the Mabul, not after the Mabul, but after the rain has stopped falling and things have started calming down, by Shalach at the Oder, the prophet says that Noach sent the raven, but instead of actually going by Yetze Yotze Vashoev, it's going back and forth. And so the Gemara is going to understand that the word Yotze Vashoev doesn't just mean it was going back and forth. Vashoev also means it gave an answer. This raven gave a very good unimpeachable answer to Noach. Namely, and Mephoshim say it doesn't necessarily mean that it spoke per se, it may mean that the way it was acting, Noach could deduce what it wants, or maybe the Adramah says, just like we find, for example, in various Gemaras, that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai and other Chachamim knew the speech of trees, like trees that make noises in a certain way from the wind blowing through them, and a Chacham can understand the actual words they're saying, similarly over here, okay, whatever, anyway. So he says like this, Amalai, he says, Rab Chosen Eni, look at this, your master, the Eivishta, hates me, Vatas Nei Dani, and you seem to hate me also. Rab Chosen Eni, you see that your master, the Eivishta, hates me, because we're not Tahur and Shiva, we're not Tmeim Shnaim, because you see that he said that from the Tahur Dika animals, you take 7 or 14 apiece, and from the Tahur Dika animals, like me, you take 2 only. So therefore, the raven is saying, and I'm a Tomei animal, so therefore, obviously, that means the Eivishta doesn't like us as much. And Va'atas Neisani, and you also are showing hatred to me. Shtata Maniach Mimin Shiva V'Shaleach Mimin Shnayim. What are you doing? Instead of sending a creature from one of the ones of which there are 7 or 14 in the Teva, you're instead sending from something where there's only 2, namely me, where there's only me and my spouse.
It's more of an endangered species.
Yeah, but it is more exactly. Good. More of an endangered species, yeah.
How many birds could he have sent?
What, he could have sent a dove instead. The next thing after... He started a dove. After he sent the raven, and the raven didn't do its job, then he sent the dove. In Pregeabi, Sar Chama, Sar Tina. So look at this. If the malach in charge of heat or the malach in charge of cold happens to encounter me, and therefore, in other words, I die of heat or cold, won't the world be missing a species? We'll go extinct. Oh, he says, Shemel Ishti Apatzarech. Maybe what is this? Maybe you want my mate? Maybe you want my spouse? Okay, so there are Mepharshim. So the Lavush, for example, talks about that it doesn't necessarily mean he's not actually suspecting that Noach is going to commit bestiality with a female raven. He means, though, that maybe you're going to go and try to crossbreed my mate with some other species over here, some other species of bird over here. Okay, there's a lot of different explanations. There's an interesting one also. There's a commentary on Rashi called Be'er Basadeh. He has an interesting idea on it. He says that the raven is arguing to Noach like this. You could, in theory, arrange a way, I suspect you, that you're arranging a way that my spouse will actually be mutter to you. How so? Because you have, the Gemara is going to talk about soon, you're also the Tashmish Amitya in the Teva, but the raven is arguing not because, as the Gemara is going to say, because you're not supposed to have Hana while the world is having Tsar, but because period of Arivia is being restricted in Teva. Well, very well. People can't do period of Arivia with ravens anyway, so that's not going to be an issue. What about the fact that animals are supposed to stay to their species, and that's in fact why we said only the ones that did that and went into the Teva? Fine, but the raven argues, if I die and there's only one left of my species, she actually would be allowed to mate with some other species, because then there's no other member of her species. So therefore, you Noach are trying to get me killed in order that you'll have an excuse to be able to be with my mate.
Why would he crossbreed her?
Whatever, he might. The raven is arguing. The raven is claiming. The truth is, as the Gemara is going to say soon, the raven itself actually was, this is one of those examples of kala poisel b'mume poisel, because the raven itself was choshed ala arayis, in the sense, as we're going to say, nobody was allowed to have relations with their spouses during the teva, and yet the raven is one of the 3 creatures that did. And therefore, he's the type to accuse Noach of being lax in such matters.
What was the other one?
We're going to say in a second. Wait. Amaloi, so Noach is in Russia. The mutterly nest. So we look at this. Even the one who normally is mutter to me, my own wife, is already is also to me, because we're also to have relations in the teva. Vanessa, Lila Koshkin, how much more so your spouse, Mrs. Raven, which is also to me in the first place, how much more so? There's no reason you should suspect that I'm doing anything with it. Which one of the Arachayim, HaKadosh, says, I'm a prophet, basically, you're accusing me of doing an Isser? Look, if I wanted to do an Isser, my wife is just as offered to me right now, and I'm not doing that, so how dare you suspect me of such a thing? Also, some of the Mepharshim point out, on the basis of what the Gemara is going to say in a minute, that the raven did have relations in the Teva, means at this point, the female raven is already pregnant. Therefore, part of the argument is, doesn't really matter. And you think I have reason to kill you, it doesn't matter. Your species is going to be perpetuated anyway, because your mate is pregnant anyhow. So there's going to be ravens in the future in the world.
Well, that probably wasn't a raven,
then. No, that's what Noach is calling back. That's why he's calling him a Rasha. He's lying. You're a Rasha, and you disobeyed the command of Hashem to not have relations in the table. So he doesn't spell it out in so many words, but that's the implication, is you don't have to worry about your mate's fidelity, because in any case, and your species is going to be perpetuated anyway. So how do we know they were also to have Tashmish in the Teva? Because the pasuk says, "Vosel teva ata you should come into the Teva, you, the ishta uvanecha, and your sons, the ishtacha, and your wife, unshevanecha itach, and the wives of your sons with you," implying the men and the women have to be set. No, well, the Noach didn't have any daughters, or at least not that are recorded. But the point is that you see that Noach and his wife are separate, because in between them is their children, and Noach's sons and his sons' wives are separated. You have it in that order. And later on, Noach, his children, his wife, and his wife, and his children, and son's wife. And later on, when they left the Teva, same in that Teva, it says, go out of the Teva. after you, the Ishtacha and your wife, Uvanecha, and your sons, and Shevanecha, and your son's wife, Itcha, we're all with you, implying that now they're mutter to resume relations. After the whole year in the paper. And that's the verse, by the way. The Gemara talks about another Omer of Yechon, Kan Omer, and that's the Tashim Shamita. From here, we see that they were also to have relations in the temple. And the idea is, brought in other Gemaras, the idea that when the world is entire, it's not an appropriate time to be having Hana. And they're in the temple when the whole world is entire, the whole world is being destroyed. Then they say it's not an appropriate time. There were three creatures that did have relations in the Teva, the Kulam Loku, and all of them ended up getting punished. Kelev, V'Ode, V'Chom. They were the dog, the raven, and Chom, the son of Noah. So what happened to each of them? Kelev Nikshar. The dog's punishment is that he's tied. What does tied mean? So the Yagrama says, first of all, it means that dogs have to be often tied up with chains to keep them from harming people or whatever. Most other Mephoshim also say the other meaning of Miksha is when a dog and its mate have relations, afterwards the dog is temporarily attached together with the female. He's not able to withdraw right away. There's some sort of thing there that swells up or whatever, and then it prevents him from withdrawing right away. So like now he looks ridiculous. Like everybody knows that they were doing it, which is Mida Kenegamida. That's Miksha. The raven was punished in that his method of having relations with his spouse is that he had to spit the zera into her mouth instead of doing it in the normal way. It's a degrading way of doing it. And Chom was punished in that in the color of his skin, that he or his descendants, as the case may be, turned black. Pasuk continues, right? Yishalach, it's actually brought someplace. It does talk about also that primarily that it also had to do with what Chom did afterwards. Noach, which was earlier about how Noach was lying over there undressed in a tent, and Chom, Lavoy, or Sarasoy, as the case may be. So it could be he was black. But Mephoshim Bechal say, when we say over here Chom Lachab Oro, it doesn't necessarily mean Chom personally. Many of the Mephoshim say it means Chom is the father of Cush. Chom had four sons, Cush of Mitzrayim, Put of Canaan, and Cush is the ancestor of all the black people. So therefore, in that name. There is an interesting thing I remember once reading someplace. I don't remember the marker of it. That what happened was Chom's wife had been mizaneh with Sichon, and she's now pregnant with Sichon's child. And therefore, in the Teva, Chom had relations with her, like to cover it up, like to in order to be able to pretend the child is his, so that people don't know that his wife is Mizaneh or something like that. The pasuk says, "Vayishalach ha'yonim." Okay, so now, Noach tried sending out the raven, didn't work. The raven refused to go. So therefore, it says he sent out the dove.
Why? Because he was upset.
Yeah, because he said before he accused Noach, whatever. So fine, Noach figured, all right, never mind the raven. Vayishalach ha'yonim. He sent the dove. From with him, the prophet says, which is a nuance that we're going to talk about. Lira is hakalo amayim to see if the water has eased up. What does it mean? From here we see that the kasha of the birds were in the same quarters as the tzaddikim. When we said before that the top floor was for the people, didn't just mean the top floor is just for those eight people. You don't need a whole floor for them. It means they also had the ofis tahorim with them, and maybe also some of the mafarshim say maybe also the behemoth tahorim were with them. The pasuk continues that when the dove came back, Vihine Alezayas Torah Kofiya. So okay, so he sent out the dove three times. The first time he sent it out, it couldn't find any place to land, so it just came back to the Teva, and therefore Noach knew the earth is still covered with water. The second time it brings back Alezayas Torah Kofiya, a torn off olive leaf in its mouth. So that told Noach that the water was starting to ease up, it's starting to evaporate. And then the third time he sent out the dove and it never returned, and that's it. It means it found itself someplace to build a nest. Okay, so the second time, Vihine Ali Zayas Torah Kofiya, why Dafke does it bring back an olive leaf? In fact, the Medrash says, the Medrash points out, it's not like it brought a leaf from a tree that was still standing in the places where the marble water went, because the marble destroyed all the plants and everything. So either there's different opinions in the Medrash, it brought it from Eretz Yisrael, because you have a discussion elsewhere in the Gemara and Zvachim whether the marble actually affected Eretz Yisrael or not, or it brought it from Gan Eden. So the point is, you have a lot of other trees that are more, that where the leaves of them are much more tasty than olive leaves. Olives are very bitter. Yeah. So why dafka an olive? Amr of Allah, the Amr of Yonah, the Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, means the dove, by bringing back an olive leaf, is effectively saying to the Eishter, the Bnei Shalom, you may say nice and merolim kazayim, let my food be even as bitter as an olive, or masurim biyavcha, but at least they should be in your hand, that is coming directly from you, now you masukim kidvash, rather than them being as sweet as honey, or masurim biyad boss of a job, that they have to come from a boss of a job, that like this, in other words, I don't want to have to be fed by noyach anymore, I want to be able to go out and live in the world and be supported and be sustained by the kindness of the Eishter to all his creatures. My mashma da'ai torof lishna the mezoni. Where do we see now the word torof in the pasuk? The simple meaning of torof, Rashi says it means torn off or plucked off or whatever. But we're understanding of it here. Vehine ale zayis, that an olive leaf torof food with a piha in its mouth. In other words, in its mouth was an argument about food for which it used an olive leaf as part of its argument. So therefore, that means the word torof has to mean food. Where do we see the word torof means food? Because we have a pasuk in Mishlei which says, Hashem, give me hatufeni, also Maloshim Terep, the daily amount that I need, the daily amount of food that I need. Hatufeni, Maloshim Torah, lachem chuki, my daily allotment of bread.
Is that great?
No, in other words, the point is, the pasuk over there is actually saying, Shlomo Malach is actually saying to the Eishter, Rosh Reish, whatever, Va'osher Altitim Li, don't make me poor, don't make me rich. Just hatufeni, lachem chuki, give me exactly what I need. So the job. Well, but hatufeni is an expression for it. So the dove is using the same argument, basically, rather than having a huge amount of food that I'm being sustained by a boss of a dove, by Noah, I would rather the marble is over and I can live out in the wild again and be sustained by the chesed of the Eishter. Yeah. So that's what I was just saying. That the Medrash discusses the question: is it from a tree that grew in Eretz Yisrael? According to the opinions that the water or the marble didn't inundate Eretz Yisrael, or did it come from Gan Eden? Even if you say, by the way, that it came from Gan Eden, then Gan Eden obviously wasn't affected by the marble. Before I should say, the point is still there had to have been patches of dry land on the way, otherwise the dove couldn't have flown all the way from the table all the way to Gan Eden.
Olives don't grow in wet.
Which is also true, yeah. So the Gemara discusses in Zvachim, everybody agrees that people in Eretz Yisrael, that it's not like people in Eretz Yisrael survived the marble, otherwise everybody could have just gone there. You have one opinion, it's a Gemara in Zvachim, I think it's Rav Machlokas, Rav Yechon and Rav Shlokas over there, that either one opinion is the water of the marble fell in Eretz, the rain of the marble fell in Eretz Yisrael, just as it did everywhere else. The other opinion is that no, it didn't actually, the rain didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael, however the people were still killed by the heat. Because you have the whole world was heated up, it was boiling hot water or lava or whatever, as we discussed yesterday, so therefore the people in Eretz Yisrael were killed by that as well. And so the only survivors, after all, were Noach and the people in the paper.
How did Noach know that the water ceased because he brought back the Ali Bayit?
That's the point, because either if he brought it back from Eretz Yisrael or he brought it back from Gan Eden, either way, the point is it had a very far way to go, so obviously the water must be starting to settle.
Maybe the Eivishter made it grow beyond the sea.
Yeah, beyond the sea, the whole world was covered with the marble. So there was, it's mentioned over there, he opened up the window. But a window doesn't necessarily mean something to look out and be able to see for himself. It could be like, on top.
Right.
Okay. All right. The pasuk continues, by families they went out of the table. It means by families, but not them. Now, what do those three words mean? Those three words, the mishpachosam, the lohim, are very hard to understand. And you have about at least a dozen different explanations among the Mephoshim. Rashi over here says it means that in the teva, each family of animals was by itself. You didn't just have, you had one big room over there, and Noach just throws in the food, and they all go grabbing for it. Each family was by itself in the teva. The mishpachosam, the lohim, rather than just an undifferentiated mass. That's how Rashi learns. You have many, many other explanations, including that it means that now they're going out by families of the teva, as in they're as we said before, they're allowed to resume marital relations, so now they're the mishpachosim, they're families again. They're not heim, they're not individuals. That's Marsha, I think, says that. The Yadrama says it means that even though they came out of the teva, but they were very weakened. They still had a hard time. All the animals, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, had a very hard time of it during those years in the Teva. So the Mishpachosim, they came out by families in the sense their families, their species are still in existence. But Veloy Haim, they themselves, weren't the same as when they went into the Teva. They were much weaker. And you have on the side over here in Maseres Hashach, it brings an explanation that the Gemara in Chulin that mentions the concept that an animal that doesn't have a backbone, so like worms and insects and whatever, can't normally live more than 12 months. So therefore, the marble lasted 12 months and a little bit. So how do you have, for example, how do you have worms and insects and whatnot now? The answer is the Mishpachos and Bolohim, their families came out, but not the original creatures that originally went into the Teva. So let's say worms, for example. The original worms that went into the Teva died at some point during the marble, and then the reason we have worms is because they had children. So evidently, they would have had to be an exception to the rule before about the Tashmish. Either that or they came in already pregnant or whatever, and therefore that's how we come to have worms now. So the ones that came out wouldn't be the same ones that came in.
I heard an that they survived because in the 12 months that they were there, they didn't age.
And the
time went by, they didn't age.
Indeed. Rabbi Yonis and Ibishet says this in Yaron Tzvash, and the Rebbe brings it in Rishimus, that indeed, because the mausoleum didn't function as normal during the marble, therefore, Taka, they didn't age, and therefore, so not like the explanation that's saying over here from the third of Tashat that they would have aged and died, but rather that they didn't, and therefore, the devil would have to use one of the other explanations of Ramesh Machos and Beloyde. And then Rabbi Heber brings in Kol Yisrael, he suggests, some other Mechorishim say slightly similarly, that what it means is Ramesh Machos, the other animals, when they went out, Taka resumed family life. Beloy came, but not Noach and his family didn't want to yet. Because we just said before that once they left the Teva, the Eibishter gave them permission to resume family life, to resume marital life, and therefore the Eibishter tells Noach that you go out, you and your wife, and your sons and your sons' wives. But nevertheless, when it says they actually went out, Vayetzi Noach, it says no. It says Noach went out, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives. In other words, they still didn't want to resume marital relations yet. So therefore, the Mishpachos and Beloy Haim, the animals went out by family, because they were still afraid. What if the world gets destroyed again or whatever? The Medrash actually brings a machlokes. Was it good for Noach to do that? And therefore, later on, Abishah gave him a bracha and then told him pruvu, and then that's it. Then Noach went back to married, and his children went back to married life. Or, adadabe, should he not have done that? As soon as Hashem told him you're allowed to, he should have just not second-guessed it, and therefore, later on, he was degraded with the whole story of the vineyard and everything. Okay. Anyway. All right. Amar of Chana Babizna. Amalei Eliezer l'shem Rabba. So now we're going along later. Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, one time asked, Shame the Great. Shame the Great, meaning the son, the one who was the son of Noach. The shame from Shame Chavon Yopin. He asked him, Siv, now it says in the Pasuk, the Mishpachoteim Yotzim and Ateva, it says they went out by families from Teva, Atun Heichon Habisun, Heichon Habisun, how did you guys fare? So the Yad Ramah in particular says this is a continuation. We just said the Mishmachosim V'loihem, that the animals came out of the Teva very weakened after this ordeal. What about you? How did you guys fare? And again, according to all the other answers, it can mean, for example, the other animals went back to married life right away, and maybe even in the Teva they were allowed to be male and female together, just not to have relations. How were you? Were you actually able to sleep in the same quarters as your wives, or did you have to stay apart, even then? Amalei, and Shem answers him, Sar Godol, how you learn about Teva? We had a tremendous amount of sar. We had a tremendous amount of trouble in the Teva. Any creature that normally eats by day, we had to feed it by day. The creatures that have to be so basically we never slept. Yeah. Like they have to take short naps or whatever. Or we'd have to feed it by night. And by the way, one of the Mephoshim, it might be Rosham Shinafal Hirsch, I don't remember, says that the Vort is, the Eibishter wanted that for a full year they're doing chesed, pure chesed to the animals, and then not looking after themselves in order to make up for the total lack of chesed that there was before the Mabel, that the way to reestablish the world, on a foundation of chesed.
Well, then you want to say in night, but
because of the precious stones, and Hai Zikisa, now when it came to the Zikis, which is a chameleon, my father, Noach, didn't know what it ate. So he didn't know what to feed it. A chameleon. It's a type of lizard.
What is it?
A chameleon. It's a type of lizard. It's a lizard-like creature that can change its colors, whatever. Yeah. So he didn't know what it eats. Yom Echad have a Yosef a Kapoli Rimona. One day Noach was sitting and peeling and cut it, not peeling, One day Noach is sitting and cutting up a pomegranate to eat. No, in the table. Nothal to lighten enough. A worm fell out of the pomegranate. Ochlo, and the Zikis, the chameleon, ate that worm. Ah, but now Noach knows. He can't be have a Govel or Chizra. From then on, Noach would prepare for it. Would prepare for it Chizra, which is either it means lettuce or it means bran or whatever. The point is something that develops worms easily, and that way there would be a ready supply of food for the Zikis.
He grew worms. Yes.
He must fly in that way. When it would get wormy, Ochlo, then the Zikis would have what to eat. What about Arya? What about the lion? What do you do with a lion for 12 months in the Teva? The answer is that, now, it's interesting, the Gemara is going to give an answer over here. It talks about a whole different idea, that during the 12 months in the Teva, the animals all got along with each other, and even the carnivorous animals, even the meat-eating animals, didn't, and therefore that was Me'eno, yeah, and therefore it was Me'eno Elam Abba, like what it says in the Pesukim, about the Gor is the Aven Keves, the wolf will lie down with the lamb, and the lion will be... So that they talk about siddur. The Gemara here is giving a different angle on it. Its fever kept it nourished. Like, you know, when a person has a fever, they don't feel like eating. The body digests its fat or digests its muscles or whatever. So the Ebishtim made in order, because otherwise, what are you going to feed a lion for 12 months in the taper? So therefore, the Ebishtim made that it had a fever. To Omer Rav, as we find that Rav says, was bottom shita v'lotzfei treitzar, not at least six and at most 12, zina ishta, a fever can sustain a person. And what's 6 and 12 what? Rashi says it means 6 days and 12 days. In other words, the minimum a person, the minimum that a fever will take away a person's appetite, and a person can live just without food and drink. But a fever is 6 days. The maximum is 12. Then Rashi says another explanation that he heard, that another Girsa is 6 months and 12 months. But Rashi is willing to hear, but I don't like that. How could a creature live for 12 months? The Yad Ramah, on the other hand, does, because if I care, the Yad Ramah says it's only 6 to 12 days. The Mabel lasted for over a year. How's that still? What do you do with the lion? So some of the Achronim talk about, the Torah Chaim, for example, talks about that. Fine, what it means is the lion would have a fever, so for a few days it couldn't eat. Then finally, it needs to be fed something. Then for a few more days, it'll have a fever, and therefore again. So this way, there's because lions don't naturally sleep that long. I don't know. Okay, but even if they sleep, still they have to eat something while they still have that. So maybe do the fever made it sleep, but yeah, that's a good point. But actually, the Torah Chaim goes on to say, we all know the famous thing Rashi brings it on the pulpit, that one day Noach is laid feeding the lion, and the lion kicked him or bit him or whatever it is. So what happens? He says, because since the Gemara is saying over here that a creature can last between 6 and 12 days with a fever without eating, so Noach figured, okay, I have 12 days, so I next need to feed the lion. Meanwhile, this time it was feeling better after 6 days, and it wanted food. So he comes in, he walks in after 12 days, and the lion is mad at him.
Put them in a cage? Or?
No, they were in rooms, whatever. And they had their individual chambers in the table. Yeah.
Is that related to the cold and start the fever?
Yeah, I saw the fever. Yeah, I guess I said it. Okay. What about Ushina? Yeah, that's it. What about Ushina? And Ushina, Rashi says, the bird that's called Chul in the Lashon of Tanakh. It never dies. So in English, it's called a phoenix. So this Ushina, Ashkechime Abba Begoni Besasna Betivusa. My father one time found that it's lying over there in a hidden room in a corner of the table. Amalei, and Noach says to the bird, like Boris is only, don't you need some food? Amalei, and the bird says, Chazisich to have a Tzurida. I saw how busy you are. I'm in a lawyer fire. So I said, let me not bother you. I'll fend for myself. Yeah. Amalei, and Noach says to the bird, Yehei Rabba Boy Thomas. It should be the Abish's will that you should never die. Shenema, as the prophet says, you find that a chul lives a long time. But Omar, that Eev says on himself, but Omar, I used to think, Imkini Egba, I'll die with my nest, like with all everything that I have intact. The Chachoil Arba Yomim, and I'll live as long as the chul, because the chul lives a long time. The Medrash says something about it, that the chul lives for 1,000 years, then it's burnt up in a fire, and then it's recreated from the ashes and goes on to live another. The chul is, in English, it's called a phoenix. So the idea of the phoenix being reborn is a mythical bird, but from the Gemara, you see over here that it does actually exist. Okay, some of them approach and say it doesn't necessarily mean it literally never dies, but at least it lives much longer than other creatures. So that was its reward for not bothering them. Okay, so since we mentioned, now we're done with the marble. Now the Gemara is going to digress. Since we mentioned that Eliezer asked Shame, so how did you fare in the Teva? So now on the other hand, so now Shame wants some information from Eliezer. Shame Rabba Eliezer, Shame the Great asked Eliezer. So now let me ask you about something that you experienced. He also Alaihu Malcolm Mizrahamida, when the kings of East and West came against you, meaning the war of the four kings against the five, and Abraham and Eliezer and went forward against them. After and Hechi Abditi, what did you do over there? How did you go about winning the war? Omalei, so Eliezer tells him, I see Akadosh Baruch Hu Abraham, the Ebrisha took Abraham and sat him at his right hand side. Representing, in other words, that Abraham is being put on a very high level relative to the Eishter. They have a shadin and afra. So when we would throw dirt at these kings and their armies, and they would become swords. Gili, we would throw them pieces of straw. They have a giri, and they would become arrows. Shenema, we have a pasuk in Tehillim. Mizmor with David. Le'um Hashem la'adoni, so says Hashem to my master. So this is Eliezer talking. My master is Abraham. So Hashem is telling Abraham, shave li'imini, sit at my right-hand side, ad oshis o'yivecha ha'adoim la'aglacha, until I make you enemies, a footstool for your feet. In other words, that I'll crush them under you.
I can sit next to an Abishter and Abraham.
Well, not, Eliezer's not sitting next to an Abishter. Abraham is sitting next to an Abishter. Yes. Le'um Hashem la'adoni, he says to my master, shave li'imini. And then you have a pasuk in Yeshaya, which taka is that Torah parashas Lech Lecha, because it's appropriate to this. Mi heyu mi Mizra, who stirred up the one who came from the east, which is Abraham, who came from Aram Naharaim, which is east of Eretz Yisrael. Tzedek yikra'el ragloi, righteousness is called everywhere he goes. Yitim mechon of goyim, he put down in front of him nations. Umalachim yard, and he subjugated kings. Yitin ka'ofer charba, he made like dust his sword, he cash nida, like squirrels blown away, cashed out his bow. So we see that dust turned for him into swords, and that squirrel turned for him into arrows that are shot from a bow. So now we have the famous story in this connection. Yeah, so now we have the famous story in this connection. Nachomish Gamzu, have a rogil, the call to have a salkele on a Gamzu Latova. He used anything that would happen to him, he would say Gamzu Latova. By the way, the order points out the original reason he was called Nochomish Gamzu, he was actually originally called Nochomish Gimzu, because Gimzoi actually, is the name of a city in Eretz Yisrael. It's mentioned in Divrei Hayom. But because he said Gamzu the Torah, therefore they changed Gimzoi into Gamzu, and they started calling him Nochomish Gamzu. Yeah.
They call
Gimzoi the Torah. Okay, yeah, right. Yeah. So he just said Gamzu the Torah. So one time the Jewish people needed to send a present to the emperor, to the Roman emperor. Amri, so they figured, Bahadi man Nishta, who should we send it with? Nishta, Bahadi Nochum, let's send it with Nochum Ish Gamzu. Jumalumad Benissim, who, because he's accustomed to having Nissim happen to him, and this way the Eivishta will protect him. Kim Motolahu Diyura, so now what happens is he comes to a certain inn, Bolamavis, he wanted to stay overnight over there. Amrilay, so the people at the inn ask him, "My Ikabadah, what do you have with you?" Amalui tells them, "Come reveal the cow to the case. I'm going and bringing a present or taxes or whatever to the case to the emperor." So those people got up in the middle of the night. Sharinu l'sikde, they opened up the chest that he was. They opened up the chest and the chest and the sacks and whatever that he was carrying. The shokel called the havagabe. They took out everything that was in those chests and sacks. Umalanu afra, and they refilled them with earth. With dirt. What? Where was he? He was sleeping in the pasture. Yeah. Kim Motavahostam. So now when Nochum comes to the palace, Ishtakach Afra. They open up the things and they find they're full of dirt. Now, it's interesting. The way the Gemara tells us, this story is also in Gemara Tainus, because there's a whole series of stories about Tzadikim and Tainus, and this is one of them. Over there, the Gemara seems to imply that Nochum has actually found out about the theft in the morning and says Gamzu Latova and continues on the way. So the question is, how does he have the breitkeit to go with chests full of dust to the emperor? So the Sefer called Sefer Achayim that was written by Rav Chaim, the brother of the Maharal, he has an interesting explanation. He says what happened was when Nochum found that the chests are full of earth, he figured, you know what, this earth will make a good present for the emperor, in the sense that I will use that earth to demonstrate to him that a person has to be, you don't win wars just with weapons or whatever. You win wars, you win your way in life by being humble, by the Banashika'afalakotiya. And look, that's what Abraham did to the kings. He didn't just go fight against them with fire and sword and whatever. So sometimes a gentle approach works. And so therefore, that's what he's going to say, that this is that's what Eliyahu ends up telling them, this is the dust of Abraham Avinu. So therefore, so that's the verse. In other words, he's going along. So our Gemara seems to imply he didn't realize that there was dust in there until he got to the emperor and they opened up the chest. The Gemara in Tainus seems to imply. They were. The Gemara is going to continue. Wait. But again, over here it seems to imply he went along thinking he's still carrying gold and jewels and whatnot and only discovered it when they got there. The Gemara in Tainus seems to imply that he knew about it already. And therefore, we need the explanation from the Maharal's brother that he figured he'll use it as a symbolic thing to teach them how to. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. But either way, he's not going to rely on a miracle that it's going to become.
He is. He's a woman beneath him.
No, he's not going to be a miracle that's going to turn into arrows.
No, that he didn't know yet. But wait. Okay.
The king could have killed him, too.
But when he came to the palace, Ishkaka Hafra, it turned out that it's full of dirt. Omar, so the emperor says, who could come with Chayfi Yehudai? Look at this. The Jewish people are mocking me. They're sending me chests full of dirt.
It's an expression. It's the same expression.
Yeah. Who could come with Chayfi? Yeah, they're making fun of me. Akul and Mikdalay, so they were going to take Nahum out to execute him. Omar Gamzul Atova. He still says Gamzul Atova. Also Eliyahu, so now Eliyahu Anavi came, the Ibn Lahuka Khadminayu, he appeared in the guise of one of the Roman officials, as if he's a Roman. But Omalahu, and he says to the emperor and the people on the court, Dilma Hai Afra Ma'afra Dabram Avinahu, maybe this is special dirt, maybe this is the same kind of dirt that Abram Avinu used, to have a shoddy Afra Habu Khabi Gili Habu Giri, as we just said, he threw dirt and it turned into swords and spears, and he took sword and turned into arrows. Try it out, and you'll see that that's what it is. Sure enough, have a machuzah de lo have a yakule. There was a certain region where they weren't all this time. They weren't able to conquer it. Shodimahu after all this time, the Romans had been trying to conquer a certain territory. They hadn't been able to. Sure enough. They threw some of this dirt against it, and they were able to conquer it. Again, the Sefer HaChaim, the thing from the Maharal's brother, is that it means that now they tried the soft approach. Instead of going, we're going to try to fight against you, a frontal attack, and every time they get beaten, they try the more gentle approach. Are you willing to surrender to us? You can become Roman citizens, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah.
According to that, when he saw the Keter, he said, if the Kohen Gadol said, well, you have to practice humility, the Keter didn't accept it. They didn't want to check it.
Right, he was going to execute them until Elio points out that, you know what, this really works. It's from Rama, you know. Yeah. I lula begnod. So now they brought Nochem Ishgamzu into the royal treasury. Amri, they told them, Shkil de Nichaloch, go ahead, you can take from here whatever you want. Malyul Sifta Dava, so he filled up the chest full of gold. So now when he came back, he stayed over again in the same inn on the way back. So the people there in the inn asked him, knew what to bring to the palace.
Ready to...
He just tells them, I don't know, whatever I took from here, I brought there. So they figured, okay, well, we got a good thing going over here. We have this magic dirt over here. Let's bring more of it to the emperor. So they took some of their dirt and brought it. And the emperor executed them because that was just ordinary dirt and didn't have any special powers.
Should he have told the people in the inn that he was carrying the jewels?
Why did he tell them to begin with that he was carrying jewels?
Yeah.
Maybe, but I mean, why did he tell them to begin with when they asked him, what are you carrying? Why did he tell them? Maybe Fakir, he figured that they're going to understand he's on an important mission, you know, wake him up early or whatever, I don't know.
Well, maybe he couldn't hide it from them anyway.
Also possible, yeah. Okay. The Mishnah continued, Dur HaFloga Eman Cheres on Abav, the Mishnah said, Dur HaFloga, the people who built the tower of Babel, have no Cheres on Abav. Now, we're going to discuss it in Gemara now. They were rebelling against Abishah. But that's going to be the question. My Ovud, what did they do wrong? Now, when you get down to it, the Dur HaMabel, we know what they did wrong.
Yeah.
The dirt of the people of Sidonian, we also know what they did wrong. The dirt of Flogger, the folks didn't really spell out in so many words what they did wrong. The Medrash, in fact, says on it that it's very obscure to figure out from the Pesukim what exactly they did wrong. And you actually have some of the Mefarshim. I think the Eben Ezra on the Pesukim says, on a Pshat level, they weren't necessarily doing anything wrong as an Aveira. Just their plan didn't jive with what the Eibishter plans for the world. They want that we should have one group of people living in one place in the world, and the Eibishter wants that people should live all over the world.
Do you want me to ask
him to go
to another
room? Because
you're taking this.
I doubt it's loud enough. I don't know. If you guys are distracted, fine. Okay. If you don't care, then I'm going to go. Okay. So that's the question. Again, so according to the Eben Ezra, for example, they're not even doing an Aveda or something. It's just the Edisha has plans for the world, and then their plans would have gone against that. So, but if we're saying that they did an Aveira, and we're saying Ein Lahem Aveira with my Allah, we got to figure out what was their Aveira. What did they do? Amri Dveir of Shila, so they said in the Yeshiva of Shila that people were saying, that they were saying, Nivnim Migdol will build a tower, the Na'al Rakiya will go up to the heaven, the Naka Oitha B'Kadumas, and we'll sit. We'll break through the heaven with axes, Kadeshi Yazuhul Neymar, so that the water from it will drain out. What does that mean? From the heaven. So Marsha says the voters are saying this way, we're definitely secure against the marble. The Eidrisha will never again be able to bring a marble because the rain will always be there. The water will always be leaking out. And the Yadrama says they're saying this way, we never have to daven for rain again. Just like the Dera marble said, the only thing we need the Eidrisha for is rain, and we don't even think we need that because we have rivers and streams and whatever. The same way, they're arguing in a different vein. Fine, if the only thing we need from the Eidrisha is rain, then fine, let's break through the heavens with axes. That way, rain will always fall on its own, and we don't need the Eidrisha at all. Fine, but okay, they still could have been a local marble, whatever. Okay.
So
there is actually, Rabbi Yonatan Iverson says in one of his Sfarim, I think, that they wanted to like build a rocket ship to go live on the moon or something. Yeah, that this way they'll be safe from a marble. Yeah. Okay. Machku alav marav. Okay, so when they said that, Yeshiva Reb Shila, they laughed about that in Eretz Yisrael. We learned earlier in the Masechta that whenever it says Machatu Alav Ma'arava, means Reb Yisrael of Chanina laughed at that. He said, "He came with Nurachad Batura." Then in that case, why are they bothering to build in the valley? Adonai, they should build their tower on a mountain, so it's closer up to the atmosphere. Elo, Omer, Yirmi, Yabal, Elazar, Nechokil, Gimel, Kippis. What actually happened was, they divided them, there were three different groups. There were three different groups that had different purposes in mind for building the tower. Achas, Emeris, Na'al, of Nation, Shom. One group said, we'll go up there and we'll live there and we'll be safe there. Achas, Emeris, Na'al, of Navad, of Eretz Kachadim. A second group says, we'll go up there and we'll worship idols.
Why couldn't they worship idols?
Because usually it was a common thing in those days that they worshipped idols in high places. You find Alahorim or Romim, like right on the high mountains and the hills, and they build bombers and whatever. So the same thing here, they wanted a really high tower for that purpose. Now, Achasemen, and a third group says, we're going to go up there and make war. Make war, either Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, it means they plan to make war against the Eibishter. They plan to make war against Eibish. Some of them, of course, should say it just means. It means they'll be able to use it to make war against any other people. Well, like this, when you're high up, you have this strategic advantage. What?
Did you go up and fight war?
Yeah, because you need.
They're going to do something to fight God.
Okay, this is what they thought. Whatever. So what happened? So each group got its appropriate. The group that said, let's go up there and live there, had faith in Hashem. Hashem scattered them all over the world. The ones that said, let's go up and make war against the Eidish, they're not the Kaifim, the Ruchis, the Shadim, the Living. They turned into monkeys and spirits, disembodied spirits, and Shadim and Living. Rashi says the difference is Shadim have the shape of a human being, and they eat and drink like human beings do. The Gemara mentions in Chagiga. The Lilin are also shaped like people, but they have ribs. Okay. And Ruchos would be disembodied spirits. So, you know, the Goyim say people came from monkeys. We're saying over here in our Gemara, monkeys came from people. This is, by the way, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. It says that the first time in your life you see a monkey, you say the Bracha, Mashana Habriyah.
That's why, because the Abish turned the people into the Abish changed the Briyas and turned the people into monkeys. No, only if you see it the first time in your life. But nowadays, I mean, everybody sees monkeys already when they're babies. Your kid, your parents take you to the zoo. So practically speaking, we don't really have a chance to make that bracha, but in principle, that's it. No. According to this, no. I'm sure there were monkeys. No, the same way as there were shaven. The same way as there were shaven before that, but now there's more shaven. The same way there were monkeys before that, and now there's more monkeys. The Zusha, I met at Nala Vanabada, but it's called the group that said we're going to go up there and worship Abadi Zara. What happened to them is Hashem borrowed Hashem's past colors. Hashem confused all their languages. And they were the ones who ended up attacking each other because, yeah, one guy says, give me a brick, and the other guy thinks he says something else, and gives him the something else, and they're hitting each other.
Yeah. Why did he kill them? The ones that were
the Rashi mentions on the topic, which comes from the better, that the reason is because they were the Asher. That was the one good thing that they had going for them. In fact, I think the Medrash says that's another reason why the Avera is not spelled out explicitly in the Torah, why we have to do this. Because even though they're doing Avodah Zarah, the Gemara mentions elsewhere based on a prophet in Hosea, even if the people are worshiping Avodah Zarah, Abi, they have Achdus, the Eibishter is willing to tolerate it. There's a Medrash someplace that says, for example, that in the times of David HaMelech, the people were learning Torah and keeping mitzvot, but yet many times they went to war and many people were killed in these wars. Why? Because they were Baalei Lashon Hara, so they didn't have Achdus among them. As opposed to in the times of Achav, for example, the
people were over there with Avodah Zarah and doing other Avodahs as we learned before, but they had Achdus, and therefore they won, and therefore they'd win their battles with no or very few casualties. So that's the power of Achdus.
It's not true that Achdus when you're not obligated to do Torah mitzvahs than when you are.
That may be, but it's okay.
Right. When you have to go under the yoke of the Torah, it's much more difficult.
Maybe not. I mean, okay, like this, if you don't believe in something higher than yourself, and they're saying we don't have a reason to believe in the Eidosha, then it's much harder to have Achdus, because like the Alphabet says in Tanya, then what? Every person's group is different. The real reason to have Avat Yisrael is because your neshama all come from the same source. Well, if you don't believe in that, then what's your basis for Achdus?
So what was the basis? They didn't believe in
it. But they had Achdus anyway. They managed to have Achdus there, a shared language and all. Actually, it's interesting. The Rav Shamshon Paul Hirsch has an explanation about it, but basically what they wanted is, they wanted to say, as we all know the famous thing that if a brick fell off, everybody would cry, but if a person would fall off, nobody would. They wanted to say the individual has no importance at all in the world. Only the collective, only the group has importance. So therefore, the
problem is that the world can't work that way. You need to have it. There needs to be room for the individual.
Especially, there needs to be an Avraham Avinu who's going to be an individual Echad Hoya Avraham and teach the world about all the course and all. So therefore, the Eibush had to destroy their plan, frustrate their plan. So what happened? Bol Hashem Sakalar.
So now it almost goes to the opposite extreme. Like every person has their own
idea of how to express things, and therefore they create a different language. No, but it was a necessary corrective. Like this, why the different languages? He goes on Baruch to explain over there that different languages express things in different ways because they have different ways of thinking about the world. Each language is a different way of thinking about the world. So that was a necessary corrective. That no, it's not just everybody has to be all under a one world government. No, there has to be everybody has to have their own that can go too far also in the wrong way. But at least it makes it possible for the world to continue developing.
Rav Nosson, Tanya, we learn in a blight. So Rav Nosson, I'm a kulam l'shem avodis l'chav niskavnu.
Rav Nosson says all of them meant l'shem avodis zara. Why? Because Simchocha nasa one shame. Because here it says they said we should make for ourselves a name. Uchtivasim, and you have a different pasuk v'shem alekim acherim l'tzaskiru. Don't mention the name of other gods. Ma'ala halam avodis l'chav, maskan avodis l'chavim. So yes, they meant it for avodis zara. Which can also mean, again, with this word from before, it can mean that not necessarily Avodah Zarah as in, for example, worshipping, let's say, a particular idol or whatever, but Avodah Zarah as in worshipping the power of society over the power of the individual. Communism is for it an Avodah Zarah also, you know, so...
It's not
Avodah Zarah. But it's a type of Avodah Zarah, yeah. You have these people, for example, you know, who go and you know, pay their respects at Lenin's mausoleum or whatever. That's not much less than Avodah Zarah, you know? Yeah. Okay, Amar Rav Yechanan, Migdol, what happened to the tower itself? Shlish Nisraf, one third of it was burnt. Shlish Nivla, one third of it was swallowed up into the ground. Shlish Kayam, and one third of it still exists.
Is that in Iraq?
It would be someplace in Iraq, I don't know. So they have, there's these different, there are these different towers over there. They have these ruins called ziggurats. The nations above all over there used to build their temples, their Avodah Zarah temples in the form of tall, narrow towers. So it could be that one of them is the remnant of the Migdol Bavel. I don't know. Amar Rav, Av Migdal Meshakeach. The air of the Migdal makes you forget. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, like, you go even to that area where the Migdal was standing, and you go anywhere around it, and you see the height of it, or like you're in its shadow or whatever. Yeah. That causes you to be forgetful. And why is that? The Yad Ramah says, because this way. Otherwise, if not, then people would just try to rebuild the tower. Like this, when you come over there and you forget what you were going to do. So this way the tower will never be rebuilt.
I think so. There's a lot to do this.
Because there's no oxygen. No, we're not talking about you go on top of the tower. We're talking about you're on the ground. You're on the ground here. I don't know. Someplace in Iraq, I guess. I don't know. Omer of Yosef, Bovel Ubursif Simen Ra LaTorah. It was in Bovel. So Bovel and Bursif, which are two, Bursif is the name of a town in Bovel, those are a bad simen for the Torah. In other words, because people forget their learning over there because they're near the Migdal. My Bursif, why is the place? So some of them are Farshim say that maybe Bovel over here doesn't mean the country of Bovel, it means the city of Bovel. Just like you have the city of New York and the state of New York, so you had a city of Bovel, which nowadays is in ruins, and a country of Bovel, which is Iraq. So it doesn't necessarily mean the whole country, it means the city, they say. But other Mephoshim say that maybe even it refers to the country in general. We learned, for example, earlier in the Masechta, we talked about the idea that in Eretz Yisrael, the people were more collegial when they learned with each other. They're not trying to slug each other up, whereas in Bavel they are. Why? Because they're more forgetful of their Torah in Bavel, and therefore like they need to fight over it, kind of. Okay.
Why did they destroy the Migdal?
The Eivishter destroyed it. The Eivishter destroyed
it. I remember, was it a lot of Zarek that destroyed
it? No, it's not necessarily, but whatever. It's probably too big to destroy it, but now.
He destroyed it because?
They should destroy it because that's part of frustrating their plan. But this way, they're all scattered around. Their tower is destroyed. Only one third of it is left. And also, I think one of the ideas is the reason why one third of it is left as a warning to anybody else never to try such a thing again. You have one third of it left. And that'll remind people what happened over here. They should never try such a thing again.
So he let it build it?
So he let him build it. And then he destroyed it. My Bursif, why is the place called Bursif? Amaravashi Bursafi. It means an empty burr, an empty pit. Meaning, in other words, that the person lives in Bursif, they forget. They're like a pit that gets full of water of Torah, but then they forget it all, like you drain it out.
What?
Okay, so that's the end of the Dura Flogger. Next, Anshe Sdoim Ein Lahem Chelek Lel Mabah. We said in the Mishnah that the people of Sdoim also do not have a Chelek Lel Mabah. So let's talk about that. Turn up on him.
It's really a pity we're behind, because otherwise we would have learned this last week while it was in Yonah Diyoma. But okay, anyway,
turn up on him. And she's doing in the chelik on abba. The pasuk, the people of Sdoim don't have a chelik on abba. Shenema, the pasuk says, and she's doing roim v'chatoim l'Hashem ma'oy. The people of Sdoim were evil and sinful to Hashem very much.
The double expression is roim ba'oy mazeh v'chatoim l'Hashem abba. They're evil in this world and sinful in the next world.
You know, their Averis are still with them, meaning their Averis are still with them come to the next world. Or Marsha says the vort is also, Chatoim can also mean lacking. So Vachatoim Lelam Abba, they're lacking Lelam Abba.
Presumably, because if they have already Lelam Abba, they don't have Chatoim.
That's what we mean. Right, that's what we mean. Amar of Yehuda, Royim Begufon Vachatoim B'mamonim. When we say the double expression, Royim Vachatoim has a different meaning. It means they were evil in that they did Averis with their bodies, and they were Chatoim, they were sinful in that they did Averis involving their money, their possessions. Roim begufon dichtiv, because we have a pasuk when Yosef is telling Potiphar's wife he's not going to have anything to do with her, he says, Eich esa ha-ro ha-gdolazo ha-chatoti le-lekim. How could I do this great evil and I would sin to the Eivishter? So we see that the word evil refers to Averis of Znuk. That's gufon. Because you have a pasuk in Parashas Re'eh that says if you refuse to lend money to a poor person when he asks, or to give tzedakah to a poor person when he asks for it, then you will have a chait. So we see that chait is associated with money.
Chatasi
is not the same thing as v'chatoim necessarily. V'chatoim means sinful. V'chatasi means I would sin. It's the same shodosh, of course, but it's not. Lashem zu birkas Hashem. When the post continues, Lashem, they were sinful to Hashem. This means birkas Hashem. This means also they cursed the Eivishter. Ma'od, and what does the word ma'od mean? Shemeskavnim mechotim. Means they deliberately did avera. Okay, the masnis atone. In a brisa, we learn a different way of learning it. It's the other way around. Roim b'mamoinim v'chatoim b'gufon. It's just the other way around. Roim means that they were evil in what they did with their possessions, and chatoim in what they did with their own bodies. because in that same connection with the poor person, it says, your eye will be bad. In other words, you'll be stingy against your poor brother. Like you said, it says, but a different way. It comes out to the same thing, but Mefarshim explains it. The Maharal talks about that basically Rabbi Yehuda and the Braisa are arguing which one is worse, Averus with a person's body or Averus with a person's possession. So, like, which one are we going to learn? Which one comes first, kind of? Okay. Lashem Zubilka Lashem, same thing as Rabbi Yehuda said. Ma'oid Zushvichas Damim. On the other hand, this Braisa says the word Ma'oid means that they spilled blood, that they killed people. And we know the word Ma'oid is related to the Achanem. Gam Dam Naki Shapach Menashe Hybrid Ma'oid with them, because it says that Menashe spilled a lot of innocent blood. So therefore, we ma'od very much. So we see the word ma'od is associated with murder. Yeah.
Ma'od is associated with the loss.
Of course, but the Gemara, when we say over here, "Roim Machatayim Hashem Ma'od," obviously it's not a b'chol ma'odecha, as in the love the Eved Shem Ma'od. So obviously it has a negative sense.
So that with all your blood, so to speak, you have to serve the Abishtha?
Sort of. Well, that's really B'chol Nafshecha. After the Noitel of Nafshecha, Nafshecha is your life. I mean, you mean your life. After the Noitel of Nafshecha, even if the Abishtha is taking away your life, you still love the Abishtha. B'chol Moedecha, the Gemara has two explanations. The Mishnah there had two explanations. Either it means B'chol Moedecha, or your possession, or it means B'chol Mido Mido, every Mido that the Abishtha gives. Okay, so he was saying Ma'oid, fine, but that's Ma'oid, Moedecha. Okay.
You look at the context.
You look at the context, basically. Okay. The only reason the Anshei Sdoim became proud and ended up doing these Averas is because of the great amount of good that the Eivishter bestowed on them. Like we said before about the Anshei Dura Mabel, a similar thing. What happened to Max Ibrahim? So what kind of thing? What?
There was Achdus.
Well, no, there wasn't Achdus, my characters, we're going to see. But the Eivishter still originally bestowed upon them a tremendous amount of good. What kind of psukim does it say about them? So just like we had by the Jodah Marvel where the Gemara brought psukim from one of Eo's speeches, where he's describing why the Rishonim have it good. Look at, for example, the Jodah Marvel, how good they have it. Similarly, we have another one of Eo's speeches where he described what happened to the people of Sdoim. Pasuk says like this, Er yot mimena yotza lochem, a land from which a land from which bread comes forth, and it's a very fertile, prosperous country.
But underneath it got turned over like fire, meaning what happens right at the end, it got overturned, the fire,
which is dying, therefore. The Pasuk continues, Makom Sapphire Avaneho, it's a place where stones are sapphires, the Afres Zahav Loy, and there's gold dust over there, which means, you know, as Marshall points out, in other words, they have the best of both. They have it's fertile, so they have all the food they want. They don't have to import food. And they also have precious jewels and diamonds and whatnot, so therefore they also have wealth. Okay. Nesiv Loy, yeah. Nesiv Loy Yedoi Ayit, it's a path where the Ayit, which is a vulture, never knew it. V'lo Shesafatu Ein Aya, and the eye of the Aya, which is another bird of prey, never noticed it. So either it means that literally birds of prey never attacked them, or it means that hostile nations, that enemy nations or whatever never attacked them. The young lions never stepped on it. The lions themselves were never to be found there. So in other words, they're not being attacked. They have no problem with wild animals either. So they're living a very comfortable life. Amru, so now these people are saying to themselves, given that this place has the best of both, it has, it's fertile and produces a lot of food, and on the other hand, there's also a lot of mineral wealth. Why do we need passers-by to come through our places? All they're going to do if they come is they're just going to subtract from our money. In other words, they're saying if we were a place where we need food, where we need to import food, okay, people have to come trade with us. Same thing if we needed minerals or whatever, we have everything. What do we need people to pass through for? All that's going to happen is then we're going to be exporting our goods and we're going to lose out.
You can sell the goods for them, make money out of it.
Okay, but they still figured that still, when people pass through, then nevertheless, there was still sometimes people drive a bargain or whatever. So people coming through is just going to cause us to lose our wealth.
Previously, because they didn't want to get food, they were destroyed. Sichon and the kings.
Yeah, well, they're not destroyed. No, Sichon and Og wasn't because they didn't want to give food, because they came and attacked the Jewish people. Moab and Ammon, because they didn't come and give food, therefore they were barred from intermarrying with the Jewish people. Right. Okay. Come, let's make it forgotten the concept of passing through, of walking through our land. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, also in those sukkim in that same chapter in Iyov, Parat Nachal Me'imgar, a river burst forth from its normal flow, meaning the river, Rashi explains, the river of sulfur, the river of sulfur and all that destroyed them, the river of sulfur and fire that destroyed them, like you had, it was flowing in its normal way, nowhere near them, and the Eveshtim made it burst out and inundate them and destroy them.
It was a river of sulfur that went right
through. That went not right through them. In other words, the point is, like normally you have the sulfur in the world, there's like a normal flow of it in the world, and then the Eveshtim sort of diverted it to destroy them. And why is that? Hanishkochim mini rogel, because they are the ones who, where the feet have been forgotten, meaning, as we just said, that they said, let's make it forgotten that nobody should ever think to even pass through our land. So that was their punishment, therefore. Dalu me'enesh no, they were weakened. Me'enosh from among people, no, and they were removed, they were shaken out and destroyed. But and what the point is, and what the key phrase in that passage is Hanishkoch and Mini Rogel, that they made it to be forgotten that people should ever that everybody should forget about passing through their land. Dorashrava
completely insulated.
Dorashrava, my dichtiv, what does it mean a pasuk in Tehillim? Ad ona tahoitzu alish. How long are you going to go and try to plot and make false accusations against people? To rotzu kulchem, all of you together are murdering. Kekir notri, like a leaning wall. Goder hadchuya, like a fence that's being knocked down. What does this mean?
Who are we talking about?
This is referring to the Rava is darshaning that this pasuk refers to the people of Sodom. And this teaches that the people of Sodom would pay attention to people who have money. They would have such a person sit down next to a wall which is already shaky, which is already leaning. And then they'd push down the wall on him to kill him. And then they'd come and take his money. Marsha says even more than that. What it is they would claim that it's all your fault. The claims of the heirs or whatever, it's all his fault. He sat down next to this wall and pushed it, and therefore it weakened it and it collapsed. Therefore, we're entitled to compensation out of his estate. Pay up.
They pushed it from the other side.
They pushed it from the other side, but they made it look like he himself, like he himself had weakened it.
And you got to fix the wall, too.
Yeah. Well, he or his heirs or whatever, yeah.
Wall Street.
Yeah. Wall Street. Okay. Dora Shrova, my dichti, what does it mean? Another pasuk, this is also from the Yod. Choser b'choshech batim yoimam. They tunneled in the darkness, into houses by day, into houses, b'choshech batim. Yoimam chitmu lamo. By day, they sealed it up for themselves. Lo yodu ur, they didn't see the light. So what does this mean? They're tunneling through at night. So what does this mean? That they sealed up by day. As if the light wasn't known.
They went underneath.
No, so that's what we're going to have to. Well, so that was a standard way of breaking into houses in those days, was tunneling in. That's the other deposit. In Bamacheret, you must say a Ghana, but you find a Ghana tunneling into a house. We talked about it earlier, yeah.
But what's
the point over here about, on the one hand, they're tunneling in the darkness, but on the other hand, we're saying by day they sealed it up. Malam and Cherry, no name of Bali Mom, and it means that, again, the people of Sodom would pay attention to people who have money. They would deposit by him for safekeeping a farsimon, which is balsam oil, which is very fragrant. So now the rich person goes and puts that balsam in their treasury, because that's where you keep expensive perfumes like that, together with your money. They know where it is. They come and smell it and sniff it out like a dog. Shenema, you have another pasuk to them, Yeshua la'erev, they return in the evening. Yamu kakola, they make noises like a dog, but you sew over here, and they circle around the city. So now, from the smell, they know where to dig.
Vinoitzman, and they go steal the guy's money.
So that's what it means. In other words, so they'd hide it away by day, and then they'd be able to use it by night to break it.
Traitors.
Yeah. Other psukim over there also in Iyov continue. Orim hilchu yolinu medlilavush. They would have to sleep naked without clothing. The ink sus bakara, and there was no clothing for them in the cold. Chamur yisomim yinhogu, they would lead away the donkeys of yisomim. Yachbul shur amona, they would take as a mashka in the ox of a widow. So the Gemara is later on going to tell stories that illustrate all these things. Gvulos yasigu, they'd transgress each other's boundaries. Eda gozlu vayiru, they'd steal a flock of animals and pass through them. And another pasuk also in Iyov, vuhulik voris yuvol, they would be brought to the grave val godish yishkod, and they'd be diligent to check out about the godish, about the heap of grain or whatever. So later on we're going to dash in all these sukkim, but first, going back to the thing about the afarsimon oil, about hiding away the afarsimon oil and then tunneling in, Dorosh Rabbi Yossi b'Sipori. One time Rabbi Yossi darshan this story in Sipori about how they do with balsam oil and all. Achtirinahi leo yaswasne machtarta b'Sipori. That night, 300, there were 300 break-ins in Sipori because all the ganavim in town got the idea to do exactly that. Also become a Saturday. So now the Balabasim, who all got robbed, are coming and causing Rabbi Yossi tzar. Omrula, you have this Urcha Laganvi. They tell him, look, now you gave the Ganogim a new way, a new idea what to do.
Well, what is it?
Yeah, so now they do exactly that. They went to rich people in town and were masked with them a farsim and oil, and then that night they dig in and then.
So one second.
Omalahu, sort of Yossi tells them, Nihava Yadina to Osu Ganvi, was I supposed to know that Ganovim are coming? I saw an interesting explanation that the vote is Rabbi Yossi expected that everybody in town was by his Dorasha. Therefore, fine, the Ganovim will hear it. Okay, but the Balabasim will also hear it. And therefore, if somebody is coming to be masked by an embarrassment oil, they'd be more cautious. Like this, the Balabasim didn't show up, only the Ganovim showed up. So Rabbi Yossi is saying, how was I supposed to know only the Ganovim were there? Kikonoch Napshe did Rabbi Yossi. Later on, when Rabbi Yossi eventually passed away, Shafi Marzavid Tzipori Doma, the gutters, like the rain gutters of Tzipori, ran red with blood. Which means, in other words, Rashi says, Rabbi Yossi lived in Tzipori. He was an Odom Gadol. He was a great tzaddik and a great Talmid Chacham. So Rashi just mentions that, Rashi just says that we just want to inform us that he was from Tzipori. He darshan this in Tzipori, and we should see, in his hometown, Tzipori is a town in the north of Eretz Yisrael, in the Galil. Yeah. The point is, he was such a tzaddik that even at Mina Shemayim, there was a simon shown that how much tsar there is when he died, that even the gutter, even the rain gutters ran red with blood. There's a different explanation, I think Marsha says, that the point is, even though the people were all upset with him, that he gave the Ganovim this idea, but nevertheless, the Eivishter wanted to show, nevertheless, you should still respect him. You should still respect him, and look what happens. When he dies, you don't just have rain running in your gutters, you have blood running.
That was enough to show them
that after all he was a great tzaddik and they shouldn't have held it against him that he gave that to them. So Rabbi Yossi had darshan that, and then people went.
What
the people of Sodom, what they do is in order to how they figure out where a rich person keeps his money. Where his bankroll is. So they'd ask him, we have some afarsimon oil, can you hold it for me? Where do you put afarsimon oil? You put it in expensive stuff. He put it together with his treasures. Then they smell it, and then that way the smell leaves.
Yeah.
And then they come back, and yeah.